June is traditionally wedding month, and while society is getting more equitable for women, there's at least one tradition that hasn't changed much over the decades. The family of the bride still pays more than the family of the groom, according to the 2017 Newlywed Report. These days, the couple themselves often pay a portion, but their families pay about two-thirds of the cost. Families of the bride pay 43% of that total, families of the groom just 24%. Same-sex couples tend to get married later and pay for the wedding themselves.
Stephanie Kunz joins us now. She's director of research for the Council on Contemporary Families, and she's also the author of the book, Marriage, A History, How Love Conquered Marriage. Stephanie, welcome back.
Thank you very much.
Well, Stephanie, where does this tradition of the bride's family paying for the wedding come from?
Well, by a long route, it really is kind of a continuation of the notion of the dowry, which reflects a particular kind of historical and social time when women were actually not considered very valuable, productive members of society. It's worth noting that in many societies where labor is extremely important, women were so important to their families that the grooms, when you wanted to take a woman away from her family of origin, you had to compensate her family with what was called bride price. Some people thought that you were paying for the bride, but no, in fact, you were paying her family something to compensate for taking away her valuable labor. But with the invention of the plow and male dominance and the inheritance mostly by men, women were not able to bring much wealth, and they weren't involved so much in the manual labor that made for wealth. And so there was a sense in which the dowry developed as a way of the woman's family giving the husband something to compensate for the fact that they were going to be supporting a woman who might be economically not as useful as the man, even though she did all of this domestic labor. She wouldn't bring in money, and so it was important for the bride's family to give her money. And I think that it continued in the 19th century and the early 20th century, when in fact women did not have much access to education and to work, and were not considered equal breadwinners, didn't have the possibility to be equal breadwinners. So it made some sense then, I think, to think, well, the bride's family should pay for the wedding, because that was basically assuring her, that was kind of a modern version of the dowry. It was assuring her that she would have a man to support her. Didn't always work out in practice, but that's what it reflected, and that's why it does seem so odd today.
Well, right. I mean, you just described a tradition that goes back a long time with a very different social framework around it. Not at all the world we live in today, where most women work and go to college and earn a lot of the family income. So why hasn't the needle moved on this as much as we might think it would?
Well, you know, we're a little puzzled by that, because so much has changed within marriages. You know, men are doing three times as much housework and childcare as they used to. It used to be that men were threatened when a wife earned more than they or had more education. That raised the risk of divorce. Now it does not. The happiest couples, the ones who report the best sex, the best marital satisfaction, are the ones who share breadwinning and childcare equally. So all these changes are going on in practical life, but the symbolic things have not changed so much. It's still, for example, the man who proposes, even though most couples have lived together before they get married, and it's been really a discussion between them. You still get many young people who ask the prospective wife's parents, and sometimes even just the father, which is really retro, for permission to marry. And so these symbolic things are very very hard to, they die out very late, I think. And I suspect it's complicated by the fact that, you know, we're still in transition. It's only in the last 40 years we've been really pushing for marriages that are egalitarian, where we expect the woman to take an interest in the outside world after she marries, and the man to take an interest in the domestic world and the family life. And yet, there's still that old fairy tale idea that the marriage is more important to the woman than the man and that it's her day to shine. And so I think that the parents of the bride feel more pressure to put that kind of display on for her.
We're talking right now with Stephanie Kuntz about why the family of the bride still pays more for weddings than the family of the groom. Stephanie's director of research for the Council on Contemporary Families. And Stephanie, I want to tease out a little bit what you just said about this idea of the wedding being a fairy tale. And I've heard it described as, you know, the bride is kind of a princess for a day. On the day of her wedding, there are these lots of magazines devoted to glorious weddings. Is there still something there about that day being so special that it is worth so much to the woman that maybe doesn't have the same sort of meaning to the man?
Yes, and I think that that's a real shame, because actually when you look at who benefits from marriage, turns out that men benefit just as much as women, if not more. And in the long run, for example, after the death of a partner or a divorce, men do worse than women. They really depend upon their partner more. So it's kind of a shame that all of this emphasis is that how much the woman needs marriage when the man needs it equally. And, of course, some men are beginning to recognize that. But there's still this tremendous cultural set of cultural tapes that we carry with us as women, that this is the day that you'll be the most radiant, you'll be the most beautiful, everybody will look at you. And that's all right in moderation if the two of you are planning to be. This is the day when we will be a partnership and we will show ourselves at our best and ask our friends and family to take an interest in our relationship, and it will all be a very nice day. But this notion that it's the highlight of a woman's life is unrealistic for most women. And for the women that it's realistic for, it's really a tragedy, because it's all downhill after that.
The groom's families today, though, they do pitch in a bit, and sounds as though some wedding planners and others report that, you know, the groom's families might tend to pay for the rehearsal dinner and pay for the bar tab. So how do, for instance, contemporary couples figure out who pays for what?
Well, I think there's a lot more variation than actually shows up in these surveys by bridal planners and married, you know, bridal magazines and stuff, because those are getting the more traditionally minded people who are planning their wedding. In fact, what we've seen, just as we've seen this tremendous diversification of family life, of the types of marriages that people organize, of the way that they regard their marriage, the roles they play within their marriage, there's also a tremendous diversification of the actual decisions people make about getting married. And many, many couples do this off the radar, so to speak, you know, civil ceremonies or some universalist minister. And we don't, you know, they probably make these decisions in ways that are much less traditional and much more practical in terms of just, okay, who has the money here? What else do we want to spend it on? Maybe we want to have a potluck instead of a great big catered meal, or put the money down and save the money and put it down on a house down payment. So there's a lot of variation. And but I do think that, yes, cultural traditions die hard. They, you know, behave. What we've found is that behavior tends to change before the ideology around it changes. For example, one really good research finding is that people say, well, oh, we had a high divorce rate because there were all these newfangled ideas about divorce. No, once people were in marriages that were bad or had conflicts, that's when they began to think about that divorce maybe was a legitimate option. And I think that the same thing's happening here. We've just been experimenting over the last 30 or 40 years with the kind of marriage that is egalitarian and doesn't have these set etiquette rules that are defined by old-fashioned gender roles. And in practice, I think a lot of people are making decisions that are more practical, more flexible. But there's if you don't exactly know what to do, there's a template for you that still, I think, affects people's decision-making and emotional reaction to weddings.
Stephanie Kuhn stays with us right now. She's Director of Research for the Council on Contemporary Families and author of the book Marriage, A History, How Love Conquered Marriage. And we're talking about why the family of the bride still pays more for weddings than the family of the groom.
You can join in at 800-642-1234. If you've gotten married lately, how did you pay for it? Who paid for what? If your children have gotten married, how did you decide who paid for what? And are you getting more practical in your wedding planning, or is it a Disney princess extravaganza? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We're talking with Stephanie Kuntz about why the family of the bride still pays more for weddings than the family of the groom. This is an old tradition. Lots of things in society have changed, but this is still a constant, more or less. Stephanie is Director of Research for the Council on Contemporary Families.
You can join in at 800-642-1234. If you've gotten married recently or your children have, how did it get paid for? How did the tab get split up? Call in now at 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We'll go right to our callers now. We've got Monika with us first in Waukesha. Monika, hi.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. Your show made me remember something that I cherished a lot. My now husband and I paid for our wedding completely. And he actually made more money than I did at that point. So you could say, since we didn't take a loan or anything, that he paid for it. But growing up, my father used to say half joking, half seriously, that the lucky guy was already going to take one of the big jewels of his house, that he wasn't paying one extra cent. And it warmed my heart every single time that I heard that. And thank you for that fun memory.
Oh, well, thank you for calling and sharing. It was a great memory and a great story of your father. And Stephanie, Monika ended up going halfsies with her husband. They paid for their own wedding. Is this something that's becoming more common? I think I read that particularly among couples later in life, this might be the case.
Yes, and with the age of marriage rising, and particularly rising for educated women who are now more likely to marry than less educated women, but they marry at a later age, they're also much more likely to be working and to be earning decent pay. So you've got a situation where you have two earners who have been out of their parents' household for a little while. And I think it's among those couples, it's becoming much more frequent that they will pay for their own wedding. They're able to, and their parents are getting ready to worry about retirement, so it's only fair. So, it varies tremendously. There are parents who have plenty of money or other young people who still, even though they're in their 30s, may have a lot of student debt. So families work this out. But I think that despite this ideology that really does bear down hard on families and puts a lot of pressure on them to follow the traditions, I think that things are getting more flexible.
Monika, thanks a lot for that call. And we're going to go next to Ryan in Woodstock, Illinois. Ryan, hi.
Hi there. How you doing?
Good. What did you want to share?
My wife's in the wedding industry, and she releases white doves at weddings. Mm. And we typically get calls from grooms' mothers to book these types of birds. All the birds do return home. A lot of times some hopeless romantic soon-to-be husbands want to do this as a surprise for their bride. So we kind of see a mix.
Interesting. So this is mostly, you see it originating from the groom's side of the family.
Yeah, I think there's definitely kind of a gift thought, from the groom when they want to do this. Sometimes they can symbolize, the bride and the groom and their journey out to the wild blue yonder. And other times they're remembering friends or families that can't be with them. So the symbolism is unique for each couple. But we a lot of times see the groom taking initiative and doing this for their bride.
Ryan, thanks a lot for calling and sharing that. I hadn't heard about doves before, but it seems to me that there might be some features of weddings, Stephanie, like we were talking about before, that the groom's family might zero in on more. Have you heard about doves like this.
Well, I did know that sometimes doves were released. I didn't know it was that that common. But, of course, what struck me about Orion's comet was that it comes on, I think that comes on top as an addition, a surprise, on top of a wedding that might have been paid for by the bride's family. So I'm not sure how much the how much that experience is reflecting a real change in the families, and it's great to hear all of these cool stories though from your callers.
Yeah, I didn't know the doves came back either. That's interesting. Yeah. Well, Ryan, thanks so much for calling, and let's go to Mike in Janesville, who's with us next. Mike, hello.
Hello. I have a kind of a slightly older wedding. We got married. I was 49. She was 48. She was 49. We had both had marriages before. My wife, for 24 years, asked for a divorce several years ago. And I'm not going to ask my parents to pay for my wedding now. They paid. My family did pay for part of the wedding back in the 90s, but we simply took out a zero-interest credit card, and my now wife made a bunch of the decorations and tried to keep the list low. It's still almost 200 people, and we probably spent $8,500, but it's on a credit card, and we're in this together. So we're just making payments on it, and it's going to be the two of us. I mean, you call it halfsies? I don't know.
It sounds, pretty close to halfsies there, Mike. Thank you for sharing that. And that story from Mike, Stephanie, is that more typical of couples who it might be a second marriage?
Oh, yes, I think so. I think that even at a really older age as a first marriage, but particularly a second marriage, it appears that people are much more practical than about saying, well, we can pay for this ourselves. We should pay for it ourselves, especially if our parents helped out the first time.
Well, that's interesting, though. He said he's not going to ask his parents to pay again. He was, older, second marriage. But are there people who do ask their parents, and are there parents who will pay for the second go-round?
You know, I'm not an expert on that, and I don't know, but my own, my son's about to get married, and I think that I'll help out the first time around, and he better make a go of it or pay for the next one himself.
Stephanie Coons is with us right now. We're talking about who pays for what when it comes to weddings, and as it turns out, the bride's family still pays for more of that wedding than the groom's family, although the couple themselves also foots part of the bill typically today. Stephanie is Director of Research for the Council on Contemporary Families, and Sean is next from Beaver Dam. Hi, Sean.
Hi.
What's on your mind?
I recently got married a couple years ago, still feels recent. And I would say I was, more of the typical, stereotypical, fresh out of college kind of marriage. And I think the point about using the, what wedding planners and stuff like that as a template, really that was kind of us. You know, we didn't have too strong of an idea of what we necessarily wanted to have, who pay what. But that template really kind of helped. And then, we were flexible and just kind of talked about it and see how we felt about it. But I think one thing that what kind of tends to leave the bride or the bride's side of the family paying more to some degree is how the bride and the bride's family oftentimes for these more stereotypical weddings just want more extravagant things. I mean, that can be part of the old stereotypes, but I think that kind of helps people say, maybe the bride's family should pay a touch more.
Sean, thanks a lot for those thoughts. And Stephanie, is there something to that, we were talking about this fairy tale day idea that the bride maybe wants to spend more on the wedding, and therefore maybe it makes sense for the bride's family and the bride's side to pay a little more?
Yeah, no, absolutely. None of these stereotypes are come because people have, bad intentions in these things. And it's always more complicated than either just straight out, old-fashioned ideas. And so on one hand, there is this notion that this expectation of the bride's family that many grooms and grooms' families have. But the other side is absolutely true, that many women do want a fancier wedding and their families are more likely to push for more of the extravagant things. And when that happens, yeah, I mean, I think that's only fair that as couples talk through these things, they're going to have to be negotiating the rest of their lives. And one thing to be negotiated is how much do we want to spend on this? And if one really wants to spend more than the other, one family does, maybe that family should kick in a little more.
And Stephanie, we've got about a minute left, but I want to ask you, what can families do, do you think, to initiate a different kind of financial arrangement beyond the traditional bride's family pays more for weddings? Do you have any ideas?
Well, I think the most important thing is to, you know, to make sure that the two people who are getting married talk about what they want and talk honestly with their parents about what the possibilities for help are. And I think the parents should, you know, especially if there are financial questions involved, be absolutely honest about what it is that they feel that they would like to contribute and what it is that they think is an unfair expectation. They also, I think, need to keep bringing the young people back to the fact that this is just the first day of the marriage. It's not the be-all and end-all. And there's a lot of research that shows that when people focus too much on having the best wedding ever, that is not necessarily any help at all to the rest of their married life. And, in fact, it may sometimes detract from it.
Stephanie, thanks a lot for joining us again.
It's my pleasure to talk. I love your show.
Oh, thanks so much. That was Stephanie Kunz, Director of Research for the Council on Contemporary Families, talking about why the bride's family still pays for more of that wedding than the groom's family.